The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Here's the question right now. Let's keep it straight talk. Let's keep it straight. Here's the question right now. Can the Rams win the Super Bowl? L.A., that's what it's about right now. Can the Rams win the Super Bowl with Jared Goff as their quarterback? He's been pretty good. And the best thing about it is it happened as a result, it seems, of McVay calling him out. Sean McVay's 34 years old. I was 34 years old 13 years ago, right? 34 is young. To be a head coach in the NFL, as successful as McVay's been, he has a winning record every year. And the fact that he's made adjustments, like, oh my God, McVay's so innovative, and they look like Super Bowl favorites, and they lose a depressing Super Bowl, really, by a low score, lowest scoring Super Bowl ever, to the Patriots. And then the next year, they're not as good. Maybe the league adjusted. Maybe McVay is a one-hit wonder, even though they're a winning record. And then this year, they're back to looking like one of the best teams in the NFL. Well, that's a great job by a young head coach. And you know what? He picked the right time to, for the first time that I can remember, publicly criticize Goff. He's got to be better with ball security. And what's happened since then? Goff's been better with ball security. He has been. And as a result, the Rams can do their thing. And their thing has changed. Look, the year they lost to the Super Bowl in the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history to the Patriots, Bill Belichick let Tom Brady make good decisions, and otherwise Brady rode a defense and running game to a win. And Goff was not ready. Belichick outfoxed him and McVay. But this was a rematch. And it wasn't close. And the Patriots have been playing very good football. They really have. At their best this year, I'll remind you, they beat Miami. They beat the Raiders. They beat the Cardinals. They beat the Ravens. You know, they came a play away from beating Seattle. They came a play away from beating Buffalo. That's quality of opposition that the New England Patriots beat this year is really good. I got to get the Pats schedule up in front of me because I'm forgetting a team in there somewhere where it was like, yeah, they're good too. Yeah. While I'm doing that, let me just say, I expected the Patriots to upset the Rams. And let me tell you something. When you really think about when LA turned it around, oh yeah, not that it's a quality win, but when you beat the Chargers 45 to nothing. Chargers are a talented team. They have a bad head coach, but they're a talented team. 45-0. That, you know, so like think about what the Rams just did. They took a team in the Patriots coming off a 45-0 stomping on the road of another LA team, right? And that's after beating an NFC West team. Any winning against the NFC West is good. After beating one of the Rams' rivals. After beating the other LA team. And it was not close. And so let me tell you when it really turned around for the Rams. This is a couple years ago. Remember when they signed Andrew Whitworth? I know this is not a sexy thing to talk about, the left tackle. At the time, the Giants, I'm a huge Giants fan, at the time, the Giants really needed to rework their offensive line. And the Giants front office felt that Whitworth was too old. Now, he was like 35 or 34 at the time. And to give him a big, big money deal, even though he was an elite left tackle, didn't make sense for them because he's going to age poorly through the contract. As soon as Whitworth started on that offensive line for the Rams became a powerhouse. You remember that? Remember how Gurley looked behind that line? Remember how Goff looked behind that line? A powerhouse. They were winning up front. You got Whitworth anchoring the offensive line at left tackle, protecting the blind side on one side. And on the other side, you have Aaron Donald coming up through the middle. You're going to win the battle up front. Whitworth is hurt. Now, by the way, he's ahead of schedule with the knee. But he's hurt. You're doing this without Whitworth? The Rams are winning up front the way they are. I mean, on the defensive side, you understand. You have Aaron Donald. You have Ramsey covering guys. You have an elite defense. In terms of talent, maybe only the Bears, when you look at them in paper and you say, all right, that defense could be even better than the Rams if they're both firing on all cylinders. But in terms of, and right now the Saints are playing out of their mind. But in terms of talent on the defense, upper end talent, give me, LA is right there. certainly top five, maybe top three, arguably top two in the NFL. So you expect them to win up front, right? But when the offensive line's winning up front without their left tackle, boy, the things are looking good. They're winning up front. See, because you think about, the Rams have changed. I mentioned earlier, when they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots, the way we thought of L.A., think about this. That year, the Super Bowl everyone wanted to see was the Rams versus the Chiefs, the two most unstoppable offenses in the world. And by the way, early in that season, we favored the Rams because the Chiefs were not good defensively and L.A. had the chance to be, right? But that was an attacking offense. That was play action with Gurley and spreading it around with the receivers. And you think of L.A. that way. And you still think of them that way. Cooper Kupp is still there and Robert Woods still there. And they can and Jared Goff spreads it around. And by the way, Cam Akers, I guess that draft pick's working out. But as you've heard from Casey Joyner, the football scientist on this show, it's run blocking. So they're getting it up front. But they got a guy who can carry the ball too, don't they? Yeah, they got, but they're not the same team that they were a couple years ago. This is not, you're playing the LA Rams. It's this dynamic offense and a defense better than the other teams who have dynamic offenses. It's not that anymore. It's you're playing the LA Rams, and that defense will kill you, and they can score points. But when you think of the Rams now, what do you think of primarily? Which side of the ball? Because to tell you the truth, I think they're better defensively than offensively. I think they have more high-pitched talent on the defensive side of the ball than on the offensive side of the ball. That's a big win for L.A. Big win for L.A. And it cripples the Patriots. It cripples the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots lose 24-3 in a game where they were the underdogs on the road, 4.5-point underdogs, but I was confident taking them in the upset. And by the way, in terms of NFC teams that aren't the Giants, I root for the Rams. I was out in L.A. for 6 years. I was there when they got the team. I was one of the people campaigning on the radio for L.A. to get the team. So as long as they don't play the Giants, I root for them. But that doesn't mean I think they're just going to win every game. I thought the Patriots were going to get them because I thought Belichick had something for Jared Goff. No, he didn't. Not when the Rams went up front the way they did. Cam Akers, 171 yards rushing. And New England was held to 62 yards in the second half. LA defense, 6 sacks and a pick 6. See, the thing is, well, Ryan Clark is on the line now. That was Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. RC, I'm just talking about the LA Rams, how a couple years ago it was all about, you know, this dynamic offense. And they were the favorites early in that season because they can also play defense. And now you got to adjust your thinking. They win the battle at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball. But to me, they have more talent on the defensive side, RC.
No, they absolutely do. You know, this defense used to be about Aaron Donald and Aaron Donald only. What could he create? What could he do? Now you look at having Floyd on the outside, Brockers stepping up. Also, you have dynamic linebackers and Kenny Young that run sideline to sideline, and you can't forget this back end, though. Like, Jalen Ramsey is obviously the linchpin. He's the superstar back there. Darius Williams with 4 picks this year. Troy Hill being able to move around. If you ever watch their secondary, you see 3 different guys line up in the slot or line up outside. They bring David Long off the bench. 2 very good, young, smart, physical safeties. Like, this defense is tough. Like, this defense is real. They can pressure you. They can pressure you with 4, obviously, because of what AD can do, and this team is built to win. It's really based on how intent Sean McVay is on sticking to the run and how that affects and helps Jared Goff in the pass game.
You know what's crazy? When they were kind of redoing things, and I don't remember, had they just signed Marcus Peters and then they trade for Ramsey and then they let Peters walk out? I'm like, wait a minute. What kind of sense does this make? Why don't you have an all-world, you know, secondary? But Peters was criticized by some whatever, but obviously he's thrived away from them. But it's an upgrade. I mean, they got, in Ramsey, they got, how many guys are better than him at the position in the league, RC?
I mean, talent-wise, none. Absolutely zero. And that's when you include the guys like Stephon Gilmore, Xavier Howard, Tre'Davious White, who are all All-Pro caliber defensive backs and corners as well. But we look at somebody as long, as physical, as versatile from a position standpoint as Jalen Ramsey is, and also the ability to do anything technique-wise where it's built in to your coverage. I think, you know, there's not really a player like him in the secondary, you know, a unique chess piece for the Rams and defensive back coach, Aubie Pleasant. And so when he's playing at the top of his game, which we've seen him do a lot this year, whether it's DK Metcalf, Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus Mike Evans, all these different spots they've been using him in, some games where he's, you know, lined up on Zach Ertz, allows zero catches. I think he's a tremendous piece to what they can do, and that's really helped them become better. Yeah. The trade was the right trade to make. The deal was the right deal to make.
That's Ryan Clark on the Shell Penzoa Performance Line. Yeah, Ryan, I mean, like, you look at Seattle, they have elite playmakers at linebacker and safety, right? But those are the wrong two positions. If you're going to have, like, the best guy in the league, have it on your defensive line and a corner, a shutdown corner. And as you mentioned, the Rams have a lot of other pieces. From the Patriots' point of view, I really thought that the Patriots were going to upset them. I did not know they would be dominated on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball to the extent that they were. Cam did not look good, and he was sat down, Ryan. But after the game, Belichick says he's still the quarterback. Now, let me tell you where I am, and then I want to hear you. I was arguing about this with Stephen A. Smith on First Take earlier today. Can Cam ever be an elite quarterback again? And don't tell me he was never an elite quarterback because he was voted by his peers best player in the game in the middle of Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees' primes, right? Cam was the best player in the game according to other NFL players, and he won MVP, and he took his team to a Super Bowl. But he's never been judged by traditional quarterback numbers because he's not a traditional quarterback. And I look at him now, Ryan, and I see a player coming off a catastrophic injury in a brand new system with a brand new coach that has zero offensive weapons. Like his receivers make him worse because no one is ever open, right? Just like it was bad for Brady last year. He got COVID this year. They don't have talent on the offense. They need to practice more, right? They didn't get to practice as much. Then he had to recover from COVID. All these things, they're 6-7. It's not like they have a terrible record. They're a couple plays away from being like 8-5. It's not that bad, and yet I hear a lot of people talking about, and I was arguing today against Stephen A., he's never going to be elite again. I think it's too early to tell. What do you think?
It's probably too early to tell, but that doesn't mean that people won't predict it and still assume that it's so, if you can understand what I'm saying. You know, it's probably too early to tell, but when you've been Cam Newton, when you've reached the height that Cam Newton has reached and now you see this fall off, you feel like there's no in-between for you. You feel like if you can't get the good of Cam, do you necessarily want any of it? What else does he bring to your team? And it seems like New England has truly enjoyed having him around the building. They love the way that he works, the way that he prepares. But when you look at the on-field play and you think about the last three games, probably not adding up to some of the games the elite quarterbacks have had and won, it starts to make you doubt, can he truly do it? You know, you truly start to feel like, okay, is this Cam Newton a guy that can run a team? Is this Cam Newton a guy that can get you to the playoffs? And you are exactly right. You think, get into the end zone against Seattle. Don't fumble the ball against the Buffalo Bills. And that's two wins right there. And we're maybe talking about this season differently. But with the record being what it is, with watching the offense, who obviously doesn't have the skill needed outside, not be able to pass the football, that usually comes back and falls on the quarterback, and unfortunately falls on Cam now.
But that's why I like one loss record for quarterbacks. I know that's the dumb, like, typical sports radio guy take, and maybe that's me. But I think it's significant because coach-quarterback combination will determine one loss record more than all other factors combined, really, if you look around the NFL. And Cam is 6-7. Ryan, he's 6-7. He just got to the team. He's recovering from catastrophic injury. He has a coach who's now using the opposite kind of player that he just had, right? Like, everything's opposite. He has zero receivers. Not a single, like, he has got no weapons. They get no separation. No one is ever open. It's unbelievable. And he had COVID this year. They're one game below 500 right now. Like, I don't know. To me, it seems like if Brady last year was kind of a middle-of-the-pack quarterback and everyone blamed the receivers, But Brady had been there for 20 years with the same coach, knew it inside and out, right? And they had more talent on that team, at least defensively, if not offensively. I'm not prepared to say Cam is done. And you know what else, RC? I love the way he's talking to the media now. He's not like hesitating and thinking, what's the PC answer? He drank the Belichick Kool-Aid, and he is spitting out the right kind of NFL quarterback answers. He takes responsibility. Like, compare him to Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz moping and sounding like a brat after being benched. Cam is there taking responsibility, sounding like a pro and a leader. I don't know. I like what I see this year.
No, I like what I see from Cam as a person, as a leader. I think this is exactly what you've always wanted him to be. I think perspective is everything, right, Max? If this is Cam's second year in the league, and, you know, say he's drafted where Jarrett Stidham is, and this is what this offense looks like. And the post-game press conferences are what they are. We're talking about and speaking about Cam Newton differently. We're saying we think we could see this guy grow into being an elite quarterback. We think we could see this guy grow into being a franchise quarterback, into being an organizational leader in the face of the franchise. But that's not where we are perspective-wise, right? We're on a guy who's on the other side of 30 who we saw be the best player in the world for an entire year in 2015. So we're looking at it from the top of the mountain, not the bottom. And when you look at it from the top of the mountain, all you continue to see is the descension. You're not expecting him to climb and get to those peaks. You're expecting it to keep descending from there. And so when you do that and you project that forward, you say to yourself, okay, do we expect him to be a better passer, a better player next year than he is this? And I think most people will say no because there were already doubts coming into the season.
Get him a wideout, they can get an inch of daylight between him and a player in the secondary. So now let's move on to Steelers-Bills, talk about trajectory and projections. The Steelers, look, they had three games in 13 days, Ryan Clark on the Shell Penzo Performance Line, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. They had three games in 13 days. They looked tired at the end of the third game. They had a 2-touchdown lead. They looked tired. They wore out against a good defense, and they lost the game. Okay, that is what it is. And again, they're not on full rest taking on an ascending Buffalo Bills team. And Ryan Clark, I think that Josh Allen's the third best quarterback in the AFC right now behind Mahomes, of course, and then Deshaun Watson. I like the Bills in this game, but it's not really commentary on the Steelers. I just think they're still going to be a little worn out. They're still not on full rest, and the Bills are ascending. Your thoughts on Bills Steelers?
Yeah, you know, I picked the Steelers just because of my loyalty to them. I'm not necessarily tied to that pick in any strategical way. I think I'm hoping against hope that they find some of that Steeler magic and pull this game out, because a lot of times that's what I was a part of, being a part of that organization. But, yeah, you look at Josh Allen, I think, you know, you definitely put him in that conversation for the third best quarterback in the AFC. I'm not really sure who else is in that conversation with him. I think it's Lamar Jackson from last year, but not this year.
Justin Herbert going forward.
Yeah. Also, too, the other thing I think we have to remember when looking at Josh Allen is we start to kind of get rose-colored glasses because of recency bias.
Right.
Right? You know, there was a time during the season, you go to the Tennessee Titans, you go to the Kansas City Chiefs, even the game at home that they won the week after, he didn't play well. Right? You go back to the Arizona Cardinals, the reason we have an opportunity to see the Hail Mary is because Josh Allen throws a football to Patrick Peterson. He throws a football to Drake Kirkpatrick to allow the Arizona Cardinals to climb back in. Yes, he does lead the drive to take the lead, but the reason the game is close is Josh Allen, right? The reason we know Anthony Lynn made mistakes as a coach against the Buffalo Bills is not because the Chargers fought so hard and they were in it and the coaching took them out of it. It's that Josh Allen fumbled the football. It's that Josh Allen throws an interception that's unacceptable to Mike Davis, falling back away from pressure and underthrowing Stephon Diggs. And so he still has the propensity to make those type of mistakes. And yes, there's the running around, the accuracy has improved. He obviously has Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley, which adds to what he can do against man-to-man coverage. But I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers, if they rush in the proper way, if they disguise properly on the back end, can create some turnovers. And I think creating turnovers against Josh Allen is the only way to win. If Josh Allen protects the football against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't think they have what it takes from the numbers they've lost defensively, from the way that they depend on Ben Roethlisberger offensively to beat the Buffalo Bills.
Thanks, Ryan. Always appreciate it. Talk to you soon. Meantime, just FYI, everybody, the Bills have beaten the Dolphins, the Rams, the Raiders, the Patriots, the Seahawks, and the Niners this year. They got a lot of quality wins. A lot of quality wins. We're about to find out if a team left for dead, speaking of quality wins, is for real or not, New York.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
We need a cough button around here. Will I give the Knicks a chance this preseason? The answer to that, on No Doubt, coming up in a bit. And by No Doubt, let me just say my answer is in the title. No, I doubt it. You can reach me. Oh, what bums the Knicks are. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Yeah. Forget
the Knicks.
Yeah,
Max, you just a tease blower-upper. That's what I'm going to call you.
It's ridiculous. I'm not going to
tease. You're a habitual.
What kind of a tease is that? Everyone knows, talking to Raj Groves, my producer in Los Angeles. Everyone knows, you know, it's COVID, so I'm in New York, he's in Los Angeles. Everyone knows the Knicks have no shot at anything and that they're a laughing stock and that New York belongs to the Brooklyn Nets.
You know how much thought and passion I put into writing these teases, and you're just a habitual tease blower-upper. I'm getting sick of it. Go ahead.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So the Rams are for real. We saw that against the Patriots. Like, they were 4.5-point favorites at home, but I thought the Pats coming off a 45-0 destruction of the Chargers in L.A. were going to beat them. I thought they were going to – forget about beating the spread. I thought they were going to beat the Rams outright. And it's not that the Rams are so bad or anything. I thought the Rams are pretty good. But the Rams are better than pretty good, and they did it without Whitworth, the left tackle, who, remember a couple years ago when everyone was talking about they have three MVPs, Gurley and Goff, about two-thirds of the way through the season, and also Gurley, Goff, and obviously Aaron Donald. Whitworth needs to be mentioned in that kind of a group in terms of the most important players on the team, and he's not even playing right now. But there's another team in a major market that we're going to find out whether or not they're real, who is also, like the Rams, in first place. At least they're in a tie. The New York Football Giants. And I was suspicious of the Joe Judge hire. I thought, yeah, I get it. He's a Belichick disciple, but Belichick disciples don't do anything in the NFL. That's starting to change. Right? It's starting to change. Look at Flores in Miami. Look at Vrabel. Look at Joe Judge. And when Joe Judge started in with this, coaches are running laps, and he gets into a fight with Colombo, the defensive coordinator, and he fires him. And I don't know, just the way he was operating seemed bush league to me. It seemed like a guy who wants to be a tough guy like some Belichick disciple but doesn't have the chops, doesn't have the credibility, and it's going to backfire. But that's not what happened. How do you get a team to buy in when you act the way Joe Judge did? By making them believe through your behavior, through their experience with you, that you follow through, that you walk the walk, you don't just talk the talk, and that you put them, most importantly, in positions to succeed. So who did Joe Judge bring in to replace Colombo? Patrick Graham. What a job Patrick Graham has done with this defense. And look, they have some talent. And Blake Martinez isn't even, he's been hurt, but Jabril Peppers and Leonard Williams, and they got some guys on defense. But those same guys weren't performing with the last defensive coordinator like they are with Patrick Graham. I have to tell you, tell me teams in the NFL with a better defense than the Giants right now. The Saints? Yep. Right now, yes, the Saints. Although the Saints haven't been playing high-powered offenses. The Giants just got done with the Seahawks. How's that for an offense? But the Seahawks did struggle with the Eagles as well. Still. The Bears, I just mentioned the Rams. These are like really high-pitched talent defenses. The Saints. How many more teams would you say, yep, they got a better defense than the Giants? Think about that for a second. They are winning with Colt McCoy. And no Saquon. I like Gallman too, but not Saquon Barkley. No Daniel Jones, no Saquon Barkley, and the defense is carrying this team. You got to give, like, are the Giants real? Okay, go beat Arizona. Go beat Arizona. 5-8, a lot different than 6-7, isn't it? Right? All of a sudden, you look up. And by the way, we have to stop saying it's the worst division in the history of football. The Giants and the Washington franchise are respectable teams right now. Right now, they're respectable teams. Let's see where they end. If no one has more than, you know, if the winner has of the division has 7 wins and no one else has 6 or something like that, I get it. But if the Giants are even 500 at the end of this year, especially the way they've been improving, I don't think you can call it the worst division ever anymore. Giants and Washington are good. Washington just beat Pittsburgh. The Giants beat Arizona this week. Yeah, I think you can say that they're real. That's a real team. And then they're going to get Daniel Jones back. They ain't getting Saquon back this year. But they're getting Daniel Jones back. And don't forget, the issue with running backs, it's all about run blocking. If you get good run blocking, a great back will get you 10 yards, a good back or an average back will get you 7. 7 yards a carry, I mean, 10 is better, obviously, but if you're getting 7 yards a carry, guess what? You're going to run the ball a lot. You're going to be very successful. The real premium of a bell cow back is that they're as good, according to Casey Joyner, the football scientist, as good on their 300th carry as they are on their first. They don't wear down, right? And that frees up like a roster spot. That's the real premium of a running back. And I would argue in Saquon's case, also, the way he works is probably helpful to his teammates. Good example. The way he deals with the media, the same thing. I would say the way he can catch passes and break big plays. Like, Saquon introduces a fear factor in the other team because there's no one in the NFL, no one, including Tyreek Hill or anyone, who's more dangerous in terms of every time they touch a ball, it could be a touchdown. Saquon's that kind of player. He touches the ball. And he was doing this behind that offensive line. Giants' O-line's gotten better. Imagine what he's going to do when he gets back, but that's not this year. This year, Daniel Jones is coming back. And it's much more important to have the marginal utility, meaning how beneficial it is to you, you know, as you increase your kind of your output. Is more important for a quarterback. Like, getting the quarterback helps you more, is what I'm trying to say, than getting your running back back. And Daniel Jones is already, I'd say he's a tick below average NFL starter, but he's only in his second year. And he's way better than Colt McCoy right now. At least he's better. Yeah, if the Giants beat the Cardinals, they're going to win the division. They will have proven they're real. And furthermore, who would want to play them in the first round? Like, I know if I was the fan of another team and I saw a defense like that, yeah, you got the Giants in the first round. Damn. The debate continues. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? No doubts next.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
All right, Max.
Let's go.
Record-wise, this matchup, not much to see here, but between the Cowboys and Bengals, do you expect Andy Dalton to get revenge versus his former team?
I do.
No doubt.
I think that I'm going to have to take at least one Cowboys receiver in DraftKings this week. The Cowboys have no offensive line, and they're not running the ball, and they're going to have to put up points somehow, and the Bengals do not have a good defense. So, yeah, I think Dalton has a good shot to get revenge on it. And he's motivated. Of course Dalton will be motivated. What else? What else you got?
We had a debate earlier this week about Die Hard being a Christmas movie or not. Yeah. Check out this special voice memo, from friend of the show, from The Daily Show on Comedy Central.
Very funny.
Roy Wood Jr.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Die Hard literally starts at a holiday party. And then a dude comes in and ruins the holiday party, which is exactly what you should do to a holiday party. Not only was Hans Gruber the hero, John McClane was the Grinch. Hans Gruber came in and gave the people of Nakatomi Plaza the most memorable holiday party they will ever remember. It's 1,000% a Christmas movie.
Yes, he's right. It is a Christmas movie, no doubt. It is. By the way, I looked into this. That's right. They're always released on Christmas. Right, I mean, like, the movies are released on Christmas. And then, by the way, Raj, the movie takes place during Christmas. And then they have Christmas-themed music, like Run DMC.
The movie was released in
Christmas and Hollis.
Spencer, give him some knowledge. Give him some Spencer.
The movie
give
was released in July, first of all.
Damn.
And second of all, like, I don't think of Christmas with, like, weapons and stuff. That gives me no Christmas vibes.
Well, obviously, right. You never saw South Park's, any of South Park Christmas specials.
All right.
Where Teen Titans go.
2-2. And Roy Wood Jr., thank you for that. He did send me that voice memo because he heard us debating about it.
Fine, it wasn't released on Christmas, but they should be. And by the way, Die Hard 3, little underrated. I didn't love it the first time I saw it. I caught it, you know, years later on cable, and I said, that's a little underrated.
All right. Switching gears. Hey, this weekend, it's Frank Sinatra's birthday. Mm. Max, you can get with some Frank Sinatra.
No doubt. Sinatra? Mm. Let me tell you something. Mm. I grew up, the music that my dad played in the house was like a big band and Motown. But more than any other music, and then hip-hop drop, you know, really came out in force, like in the record industry in the early 80s. It was over. That's mainly what I listened to. But Sinatra was on in my... If we were ever in a car, we lived in New York, so my dad would rent a car if we ever had to leave.
Sure.
But Sinatra was playing the whole time. If you ever went into a room my dad was in, he wasn't watching TV or working on something, even if he was, whatever, Sinatra was playing... It was Sinatra, Sinatra, Sinatra. I wanted to be Sinatra when I was a kid. Yeah.
Ah, all right. Cool guy. He would have been 105, in case you were wondering.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hey, check it out. What New York's been waiting for. NBA preseason starts tonight. Max will give the Knicks a chance and watch some Knicks preseason.
I'm trying to think. Instead of saying Nah, son, could I say, have you lost your damn mind?
Come on, man. It's the
Who
new
would
season.
Do that to themselves.
New
Who
hope.
Watch
new
the
season.
Knicks. What did I lose a bet? Am I a political prisoner? What just happened? That's like a violation of the Geneva Convention to be forcing someone to watch the Knicks. That's a
it's
war crime.
What if you see something like you got the rookie
sad,
Obi-Wan
sack, sorry got... franchise year in and year out running out a hopeless roster? Give me a break. And by the way, even when they were good, they weren't great.
Right,
and you think
right.
This is all New York deserves? Come on. By the way, it doesn't. Here's the other thing, Raj. The Knicks don't even matter. They don't register anymore. No one cares. The only thing New York cares about in basketball right now are the Nets. They're the only relevant team in New York basketball. And it's not coincidental that as soon as another New York option is presented to the fans, they don't care about the Knicks anymore. Like, realize, for years, they were the only game in town. So you had to care about them, right? As soon as another option's there, goodbye Knicks. When I did the old Max Kellerman show in New York, I realized, hey, the Angels are the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They're not even in Los Angeles, but they call themselves. LA is, like, big enough. So I realized, why do we have to follow the Knicks? Let me take an area close enough to the Knicks that you can consider, like, part... So I said, how about the Cleveland Cavaliers, since they have LeBron James? We'll call them the New York Cavs of Cleveland. And we used to follow them. We used to have Mike Brown, the coach of the Cavs, appear on the Max Kellerman show as the coach of the New York Cavs of Cleveland. We used to follow them like they were the local team because there was no other option in New York. As soon, like this. See, I'm snapping into the microphone. Hear that? As soon, like this, as there was a single other option in New York basketball, the Knicks are yesterday's news. Bums. No one cares. Irrelevant. Boring. Torture to watch. It's all about the Nets. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Even the controversy with Kyrie. At least it's exciting. NFC teams better take notice. Max Kellerman Show.
The Max Kellerman Show. The podcast.